Hello, and thank you for listening to Saga Podcast. This is Sarah with my co-host, Garrison Wortham, and we have a guest today whose name is David. He is the one who introduced this movie as an idea that we should cover, and so coming 2020, we're excited to do this and excited to have you on, David.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Spoiler alert, this audio may contain spoilers, so please proceed with caution or an open mind. I don't care.
So this is Wicked City. Little bit about this. It was set to come out in 1987. It is a Japanese OVA, which is a dark fantasy horror kind of thing. And it's produced by Video Art and Madhouse. It is based on a series of novels by the same name of Blackguard, and it's pretty good. It's pretty interesting to see like how like some Japanese books have turned into like films like this. That's pretty normal though, I think. But yeah, that's pretty much it. And then Garrison, you want to tell us about the plot?
Sure. Most of the plot of Wicked City revolves around the Black World, which is this interdimensional land filled with demons, and we follow the main character Rinzaburo Taki, who's this like a salaryman by day and a blackguard by night. And what the blackguard is, they are like soldiers of protecting the balance between the human world and the black world filled with demons. And one night, you know, after months of seducing this dime, Taki finally takes this girl home, and they do the whole wham bam thank you ma'am. And this woman ends up being like a spider demon from the black world, ends up taking his seed. And then Taki escapes. And the following day, Taki ends up in a skirmish with some demons. And this is when we're introduced to his partner, Makie, who is actually from the Black World. But, she also wants to maintain order and peace. So Makie and Taki's mission is to protect Giuseppe Maret, which is like a 200-year-old
pervert.
It's not explained if he's a demon or a human really, but his physical features kind of suggest that he may be from the Black World. That's their mission. They go on a very interesting journey, which I guess we'll talk about right now.
Yeah, so I have some interesting, I don't think we just said this, but today is like a Know Your Tropes Day. we are covering tropes of this movie, and there's quite a few of them. Not all of them are as expressed as some of them you might think, so we'll just kind of like break them down for you as we find necessary. But I do have some ideas about Giuseppe Maiart. He is an interesting character.
Oh yeah.
So as far as tropes, the ones that I found are obviously 80s. This is an 80s film, so it's everything is lights and fashion and square shoulders and future looking hair. It's very futuristic looking,
Yes, it's very much an 80s look.
Right. There's the siren. There's a lot of car driving in this. I don't know why. they don't need to show the car driving. I think it's just cool. It's a cool thing to add in there. But there's lots of car driving in this. Lots of cigarette smoking, lots of drinking. As far as the demons, I was thinking Constantine. I know that came out later, but I think it's based off of something else. It's pretty similar, about a hero fighting demons. There's perverted old man, obviously, star-crossed lovers, tying of families together by blood and forcing young ones to marry to ensure peace amongst lands, very over sexualization of women. I wrote down tentacle porn because there's some very obvious porn-esque images in this film. The main protagonist is a James Bond-esque character that is tacky. He's very emotionally unavailable. He's kind of blank, honestly. Doesn't really have much of an arc, unfortunately, in this film. And then there is demon regeneration, 80s love reunion, with the 80s music, and it's all lovey-dovey. I don't know. There's all kinds of stuff in this film. That is mostly 80s, I would think.
Yeah, when I'm thinking about it, I'm very much thinking about the films that are kind of big, popular in the 80s. You got things like Mad Max and Blade Runner, very light driven, and lots of car scenes. I think that stuff comes through, even though it's a Western influence, it comes through pretty strongly in these movies.
Yes. And I wanted to look at different movies that might have influenced this. For example, I brought up Constantine. That came in 2005. That has no influence. Maybe Constantine was influenced by this film. Not sure. But I wanted to look up films that had influenced this film, and I didn't have time. So that's unfortunate.
Well, I had done a little bit of looking into this just to get some context historically for animation. And Miyazaki had released only three movies before this movie came out. There's Castle of Cagliostro, Nausicaa Valley of the Wind, and Castle in the Sky. So there's also Dragon Ball aired in 1986. And so there's a lot of traditional and set in kind of a fantastical realm kind of animation that's going on at this time. Very lovey-dovey, very warm. And perhaps this movie is kind of a contrast to that, in that it's kind of very adult, very dark, very cold kind of look.
This was during a time when this was a trend, I think, that was happening during this time. There was Fist of the North Star, which was gaining in popularity, and things like Mad Max, Terminator, and the Rocky films were they were gaining in popularity, and I think the East really took to those kinds of hyper masculine, super violent films, and I think that it showed in this work, this project.
Yeah, but, so I just looked it up, Akira, one of the films that's, I would feel would be super influenced by this too.
Definitely.
Came out a year after this film was released.
I think that's a really interesting contrast, because I think one of the things that these movies have in common is the story is actually kind of weak. They don't quite, in the 80s, they don't quite have narrative as a tool down yet, but the art is spot on. The directing is spot on. All of the camera angles are spot on. And the score is even kind of spot on. I think it has a lot of these animated film attributes that we know and love that are there and really interesting, but the story is really weak.
That's crazy that you say that, because on Wikipedia, I was looking up some information about this, and one of the main comments that was on this film was basically said the same thing. There's hyper masculinity, way too many sexualized aspects to it. And they made a comment about the director saying, yeah, this is he makes stuff that looks like it is film, it's not in animation. and therefore, like, it takes you out of that a little bit, because you like, I think with animation, you don't necessarily view the characters the same way. Like, you're not exactly rooting the characters on the same way, because it's like, I don't know, maybe it's like a psychological thing. Like, you're not seeing them as you entirely.
I think that partially comes from the fact that our protagonist is like a grown man. He's like a, he comes off to me like late 20s, early 30s, like career driven kind of individual. Like it's like a cop film. And so he doesn't really have much of a character. It's hard to see yourself as Taki. It's hard to imagine his life, because he's too cool for school. He's like, all he does is, you know, shoot people and have sex with beautiful women. But with a lot of these other things, like, I mean, just take Dragon Ball, for example, you've got this little kid. And again, you know, these things are typically watched and viewed by children, but obviously Wicked City wasn't. So I think there's something to the fact that we're used to seeing in animation a small character that's kind of very childlike, and in that way, easy to identify with because they have personality. Taki doesn't have any.
No, he does not. That brings up a good question that I have, is whether or not you guys saw this in dub or sub?
Dubbed.
Yeah, I've seen it dubbed.
Okay. Yeah, I saw it dubbed too. And honestly, like, I hope that the Japanese version is better, because the English translation was just too much. Like, Taki's lines, his one-liners were awful. They were so terrible.
They were pretty bad. Weirdly enough, though, Giuseppe Baillard's character is actually relatively well voice acted. I hate the character. I hate a lot of things that he has to say, and I hate his tone, but it's done well.
The thing about, like, dubs is that, like, during the 80s and 90s, they put, like, ads in the newspaper and just got, like, you know, Joe Schmo to, like, voice certain characters, so it wasn't until relatively recently that the standards raised so high. But I mean, I found it pretty competent for its time. It was pretty decent, I thought.
Okay, that makes sense.
The other thing too is that I've noticed this just in watching anime from like earlier time periods, that when they try to dub it, they place a lot of emphasis on trying to match the lip syncing. So it's like the artist sits there and they watch the mouth movements, and they try to come up with something that'll fit. Whereas in modern times, it seems like they do a little editing and they write the right lyric or line, record it, and then try to make the lip syncing match what they said a little bit. So there's a difference in like approach as time goes on about how people try to voice act these movies.
I'm sure it becomes easier with technology too.
Let's see. I have the demons in a human skin trope, like kind of like Men in Black or something like that. I believe they said that Makie doesn't actually look like that. Like she looks kind of monstrous, they suggest.
Because she's not, like, she's just holding a human form.
Yeah, exactly.
So I wonder what she looks like when she sets her hair down, like, anyway. Sorry, there, guys.
we see a variety of demon shapes in this movie, where I think at the very beginning there's a character who is like very spider looking. There's a point at which Maillard's character gets kidnapped, and that woman just kind of has the ability to absorb other creatures into their body. And then we have the amazing fight scene like 2/3 of the way through the movie, where we have a demon who, his thing is, he's kind of like stone-like. He can like make these different appendages. So there's no real theme with how these demons look, but they take on these fantastical forms.
That's pretty cool. So kind of the whole crux of the film is it turns out the old perv was actually looking over Taki and Makie, because like they're like they were like engineered to breed and to like create this life form that would create ultimate peace or something. And that kind of got me thinking about how their life was almost like chosen for them, and kind of brings in the argument of like free will or something like that.
Interesting. It does kind of become about this preordained thing, because we're kind of introduced to the character Giuseppe as like a red herring in a sense. And there's this weird, I remember a feeling of, through watching this, that I kind of like, I got really upset at this movie, because the whole point of it was that Giuseppe's character is like the important piece. They're trying to make this peace treaty thing be a thing, and Giuseppe is somehow really important for these negotiations, but he ends up getting himself into all this trouble and is like the main reason that the mission fails. So he almost like doesn't care or whatever, but you realize then at the end, when that whole arc is revealed, that he was testing them and trying to put these two together, like, oh, I guess it makes sense.
So I have a brief character description of Giuseppe. Basically, he's like OP, so he probably doesn't care because he can get away with anything. You know, he's got these lightning powers. He doesn't care. He's safe. He can save these kids whenever he wants. He was just waiting for them to hook up.
Yeah, that's true. That did happen. but we kind of skipped over this, but the succubus archetype of how they state several times in the film of like how like Black World Puss is like some really good shit, and
oh yeah,
primo, if you will.
Yeah. And I don't know, I'm still trying to process that.
The thing that I found kind of interesting about this movie is that despite the fact that, like, presumably demons can be male or female, and obviously so can humans, the predominant display is that most of the demons that we interact with and see in this film are women, and most of the other male characters are men. So it creates this weird dichotomy of like, kind of like, dualism, where all of the women are kind of inherently evil, whereas the men are the heroes, but also that the women are the strong ones. So they're the ones who are like have positions of power, and they're the ones who can kill at any moment, and they are scary, you know? And so there's something to be feared, as opposed to like maybe a more Western interpretation where they're always damsels in distress or weak or frail, or their only route is to use their sexuality as a power play, whereas these demon women have a lot of options.
Yes, that's one thing I noted about Make in particular, is like I was like, I wanted to put her as like a frail woman. I mean, she's displayed as that, but really she's super badass. She doesn't care. She can hold her own if she really wants to.
Except at the critical point when she gets captured and does become a damsel in distress to be rescued by Taki.
Oh yeah, that was unnecessary. That didn't need to happen.
It was unfortunate because that's the coolest part of the movie.
You talking about the fight scene?
Yes, that fight scene specifically, the way that shot is directed, where I believe the moment is this other female succubus character who was the one who captured Giuseppe. She's there and they're kind of testing him or something. There's this moment where she's like testing the purity of his heart or something like that. And he snaps, and then he goes, and there's this really wide pan shot that like follows him through as he like throws this punch that goes through somebody's face and knocks their eyeballs out of their head. And it was just like, it was a gorgeous shot. That shot made the movie worth it to me.
Right.
Are you talking about the scene in the hotel? I think it was. Is that...
It's not in a hotel. It's like it's a scene where after Makiya gets captured, she's sort of taken to this like abandoned building or like construction site where she's essentially getting like double teamed by other demon men and stuff. And there's this kind of mob boss character man who's there with this other woman who was the one who captured Giuseppe. And the premise is that these demons have kind of taken Makiya back because she's kind of like a traitor, and they disagree with this whole peace treaty. They don't want demons and humans to get along. But by this point, Taki has like developed an emotional attachment to Makiya, and he's going to try to rescue her.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes. So what else do you have, Garrison, for tropes?
Well, this is a really long pause. This is interesting.
It's all right. It gets edited out. No big deal.
Oh, okay. So, during that part that we were just talking about, I have here partner of the main character who quote unquote sacrifices themselves only to be revealed that they aren't actually dead, like, because that was about like two-thirds halfway through the film, and at this point I was confused because really it didn't really seem like Makiya had that much screen time up to that point, and it made it seem like a big deal, and I was confused. I thought that couldn't be right, and it wasn't right. She lived and almost died again by the spider chick.
They both almost died, didn't they? Which I'm surprised they came out of that without any, you know, scratches or wounds. But then I guess it's like in the next scene, they wake up and they're perfectly fine and they're in the church and then they're doing it. And then there's a baby and it's consummated and she's pregnant in like a matter of minutes.
It's Black World Puss. I'm telling you. It's primo shit.
All right.
There's really weird quality. The really weird thing about this movie is that there's not really enough time, because it's jam-packed with all these sex scenes and action shots. There's not really enough time for the characters to develop any kind of emotional relationship. And by the end of it, once they like consummate their thing and it's revealed, oh, it's in the stars. You guys are supposed to be together. And it's like this important historical thing. That there's this feeling, at least for me, that like, what? It really? It doesn't really make sense, because we don't know who any of these people are. We don't really have an idea of who Makiya is as a person, or like her hopes and dreams, or who she is as a character. And we similarly don't have that about Taki. And so it's just this real carnal experience. People are just going through life like fucking each other and shooting each other and working their job and being an 80s tycoon and probably ripping lines of coke off screen. You know, it's very Wolf of Wall Street in that way. That it's like, this could be a movie about like stockbrokers or something, but they're all emotionally vacant. And so the idea that they're like meant to be seems so cliche, and also maybe even juvenile. And that's like a sense that I got from this, is that it very much reminds me of like a story that like a teenager might tell, in the sense that like I've seen a lot of like hentai that have a similar plot device, and this movie being full of smut is basically kind of just a long form hentai.
Yes.
I think since this story was based on a six book series, I kind of want to know more about the director's intent on this film, because it seems like the sex scenes and some of the violence was kind of long and took a lot of the screen time, which you kind of mentioned, David, and which could have been used to further like the characters and stuff, but I'm kind of curious about like the difference between this and the books, and like how close or how different they are.
That's a good question. So when I was looking at the Wikipedia for this, the translation for the original title, which was Yoju Toshi, means Supernatural Beast City. So I feel like that's probably a better title for this than just Wicked City.
Yeah, Wicked City as a title seems very American. You know, I think like Sin City. It's kind of sensational, but doesn't really tell you anything about the film.
Also, this was the first time this director had ever done anything. This was his directorial debut. His name is Yoshiaki Kawajiri.
Yoshiaki Kawajiri. And yes. When he did this, he was 37 years old. I just found out.
Yeah, that we were talking about how Miyazaki was his first theatrical film he did when he was 40, and that's kind of like mind blowing, you know, like he's middle-aged, and really his career is kind of just starting, you know?
That's why I don't feel so bad about being only 26, 27, and not having much done in my life.
Yeah. Something I wanted to mention, it's an idea, but I don't know like how to quite piece it together. I think there's a theme here, but I'm going to ask your opinion on it. So, like, the city, you know, it's glamorous. It's, like, filled with, like, lights and colors and things like that. But, you know, it's inviting. It's colorful. But underneath it, there's, like, sinister things happening. There's, like, these gluttonous creatures that basically want to steal the essence of humanity, mainly men, it seems. And I wonder if that's like a commentary on something.
On what? Like,
I don't know, consumerism or like weak-willed individuals who give in to carnal pleasure, creating a society that that's like rotting on the inside, but still looks nice on the outside. I don't know.
My confusion, I think, would be like, is it the humans that are the enemy or is it the demons? You know, like, which one's really in the wrong here? The demons are living among the men, it seems, so they're having the same lifestyle. But, like, I guess, as you said, that there are ones that just want to be themselves. I don't know. I would feel like the demons are just like, yeah, man, I just want to, like, lounge out, be myself, you know, kill a couple humans, not a big deal.
We only see like, bad or mostly, like, bad demons. Like, we don't really see any bad humans, so it's kind of hard to say, or maybe we're meant to, we're supposed, it's implied that there are also bad humans and good humans, kind of like how Machia is like a good demon, but they're also bad demons,
right?
And how like don't judge or something. I don't know.
I see this movie, and I'm not sure if this is intentional really, because I think that this movie really is about just like a fun time. It's about like action, it's about romance, it's about sexuality, it's about titillation. It's just meant to be like candy in that way. But the way I kind of look at it is as a commentary on like relationships between men and women, and how there's this underpinning of like a distrust between the sexes. Like, there are these two worlds portrayed within Wicked City that are connected but entirely separate. And each of these people have to like live in contrast with each other, the humans and the demons. They have to get along, and there's this peace treaty thing that's trying to happen to kind of end this eternal struggle, so to speak. And each one of these sides wants something from the other, you know, regardless of the fact that it would seem like these demons could at any point just destroy humanity. They still kind of like go to the human world to like have sex with them and steal their life force or get things from them. And Machia, as a demon who like wants to see this treaty happen, is kind of implying that they have something to offer each other, and yet there's kind of like neither side really trusts each other, which is why they need this peace treaty.
Okay, and they need to make a baby in order to do that?
Yeah, and you know, it all culminates in this peace treaty, which is really just a symbol for having sex.
Huh. Also, I was thinking, I don't know if you guys thought this too, but Giuseppe Maillart, I was thinking he was the previous baby. I mean, I know he's supposed to be only like 200 years old or whatever, and if it's like every 1,000 years they have to create up a new peace treaty, so the math doesn't really line up. But I was thinking Maillart could be the previous treaty's baby. Just a thought.
It's very possible.
No, don't encourage her. That's a terrible idea. But
Woman, they all got these crazy ideas. What do we do with them?
There is a sense though that he's both human and demon, you know. He's got these, he lives in the human world and is very like, has human desires or whatever, and has these demonic powers. So I mean, it's conceivable and maybe even implied, because he was, I can't remember this at this point, but did he, is part of his deal is that he was there at the last treaty?
I don't think they explained that. Maybe I missed it, but he is important. He's supposed to be like, I don't know. I think I missed that.
I don't know.
Either way, Garrison, you don't think that he's the baby of the last treaty.
Maybe he would have said it like outright if he was the baby.
Okay. Could it be possible that he's lying about his age, since he's kind of lied about his whole motives throughout this whole film? And, you know, yeah. Could he be lying about his age?
Yes.
Certainly. I mean, he's unreliable.
Well, there you go. You're right, Sarah. It seems that he is the Christ-like figure of the...
Okay, please don't compare Giuseppe Meyer to Christ.
Now, the third act was kind of, I found, seizure-inducing. Like, there was lots of flashing lights, and I guess it was okay because no one, like... There's no controversy behind it, but I found it kind of distracting.
It was. You're talking about like when, which scene was it? Like after the fight scene?
Like with the lightning and like on top of the church. Mm-hmm. What kind of, or maybe it was when Takie and Takie and Makie were webbed up, and then the lightning struck the spider chick. Like during that, yeah.
Yes, which I thought was really cool. Like, she got zapped in the coochie.
Yeah, we kind of just glossed over her vagina teeth mouth thing.
So this brings up a very interesting point, in the sense that, did you guys ever see that movie that came out in like the mid-2000s called Teeth? It's about a woman with vaginal teeth. Do you think that movie was directly inspired by Wicked City?
Man, it's terrifying.
Could have been. I imagine that's a phobia for most women, of, you know, spontaneous or like growing teeth, or like just.
Hold up, guys. You think that's a phobia of women? That's a real medical thing, though. Like, you can grow like hair and teeth in like your fallopian tubes if you have too many hormones going on.
Wow. Like calcium or something, or?
Yeah, like, I can't remember what it's called, but it's like you almost grow like your cells start freaking out and they start growing another human. Not a baby. This is you. It's not like another human. It's growing like teeth and hair and nails and crap like that. It's so gross.
Like a twin.
Yeah, like a twin.
Because I have heard about, you know, people who have like absorbed their twin in the womb and then have like little teeth or hair or something like that on their body. It's like a leftover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, apparently it can like drive a woman insane, even though she doesn't know that she's got this like thing growing inside of her. And it's like, women will almost die. I don't know how, like, it's probably like 1% of 1% of women get this, but yeah.
Is there something they can do about it?
Get it surgically removed. That is it.
Get some braces down there, or...
Oh my god.
I'm intrigued, though, that you think that that's a phobia of women, that they have, like, teeth down there. I feel like that'd be more a phobia of men.
Yeah, but the woman has to live with it. Like, the guy just experiences it for a time. Like, it's not their body, so I find, like, a form of body horror. I'm like, because, you know, that's like a genre of horror, of like transformations to the human body and like the different physical and psychological effects that can have on the person that's experiencing it. So that's kind of
okay. So you're kind of associating it with like maybe like a fear of rejection or some sort of like psychological or emotional ostracization because they're like deformed or mutated in some way.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Because I'm thinking, you know, it would really suck to get your dick bit off.
Listen, guys stick their dicks in mouths all the time. They have teeth. They're not scared of that.
But what if the, you know, the vaginal teeth have like kind of a mind of their own. I mean, that's what we've, you know, this is like a twin or something. It's, and there is a sort of, I don't know how you guys feel, but there is a sort of sense that the vagina is kind of a sentient life form. And maybe, you know, maybe it would be willing to bite when the woman might not.
Well, I mean, if you're gonna rape her, that would actually be really beneficial. We should all grow teeth, women. Let's grow
teeth.
That's
the next evolution. Grow teeth.
Yes. So to prevent rape, grow teeth.
Should put that on a shirt.
Yeah, like, what if, so like, you know, male cats have like barbed penises. So what if women evolved to like have like barbed vaginas to like prevent like rape? Anyway, this conversation is getting really weird.
So Wicked City.
Yeah, Wicked City. This has brought on some very interesting standpoints, I think, though. It's a very sexualized film, so it's kind of hard to deny it. Like, I think I mentioned like the tentacle porn part. Like, it straight up looks like this dick looking tentacle thing is like going in Maki's mouth. She's choking on it. Like, that's, if that's not an homage to dick sucking, I don't know what is.
No, it's clearly a moment. So yeah. How do you guys, maybe we should just talk about the like sexually explicit nature of this. We're sort of reviewing smut. And so, I mean, do you guys find this movie erotic?
Yes.
It was so quiet.
I had the most confused boner throughout the film.
Okay.
I don't find it sexy, but that's just me. I was just reviewing it as like scientifically.
Right, you're a field researcher, and these are just behavior you're writing down and commenting on. It's completely divorced from you. But as a female, I mean, do you feel that the representation of sexuality in this movie is positive, or is it negative, or is it? I mean. It seems to me that there's quite a lot of like rape in this movie.
There is. Okay, so I don't know if I'd be the best person to ask about this because, like I said, I don't really view it like that. Like, I'm not a porn viewer, so that's not, I don't partake in the porns. So for me, like, that is not something that I would look at sexually anyway. I know that there is a very large subgenre for BDSM, for stuff like that, and there it's done in a safe way. So for me, I know that it's fantasized a lot, but there are dark sides to rape culture. It's just a matter of like how you view it and how your partner views it and how you guys communicate in that. If it's non-consensual, then there's a problem.
Okay, so you don't necessarily feel that there's anything inherently amoral about the representation of sexuality and the treatment of women in this film?
I think, no, I don't. You guys got really quiet about that.
I'm still trying.
It was definitive. Where do we go next?
If it's consensual, it's consensual, but... I don't know. Maybe we should see more men being raped. I feel like that would be true equality.
Okay. At least in like a visual narrative setting, you know. You're not like advocating for the rape of men or necessarily, but like it's the portrayal of in like sexualized media, perhaps.
Yeah, because I'm positive it happens.
Of course.
Yeah. What next? Where do we go from here?
That is, I think that finalizes our podcast for today. Don't get raped. Don't mess around with demons that are like radical, I think.
And ask consent, you know, talk to your partner about whether or not they have teeth growing in their vagina.
Right. This is really a podcast about sexual consent and not about Wicked City.
Sure. I guess that's our PSA for this week. Don't rape.
And don't bite.
All right. So thanks for coming on again, David. Next week, we will be discussing a movie called Shin Godzilla with the new format, Devil's Advocate. And David will be joining us again.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And thanks for having me, guys.
Peace out. Thank you for listening to Saga Podcast, where we talk about animation and animation things. This is your favorite co-host, Sarah, and I would like to remind you before you head off that we do have a Twitter, a Facebook, an Instagram, a website, and soon to be a Patreon. So if you could reach out to us, leave us a comment, a review, anything that you like, and we will appreciate all of it. Otherwise, have a wonderful week, and we will see you next time.
Bye. See you next time. I hope you liked it. Come again.